It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Mets fans? Jack Manuel here for another Brooklyn Buzz, and dear Lord, is it a relieving one, because the Nets beat the Detroit Pistons. I'm correct in saying, just double checking, the Nets didn't go down. They beat the Detroit Pistons 118-112. They set history. The Detroit Pistons, 27 straight losses, most in NBA history. But it wasn't an easy one. It wasn't easy by any stretch of the imagination. There was some nerving moments, whatever you want to call them, throughout the game. And to end it, I'll go through, I guess, the start of the game, because the Nets started the game pretty pitifully. They gave up, like, I think it was a 14-point lead. Yeah, a 14-point lead to the Detroit Pistons. They scored, like, 8 points, I think it was, in the first 6 minutes of a game to the Detroit Pistons. One of the, now we know, the worst team in NBA history, at least this season so far, over a specific stretch of games. But it was a guy who didn't play in the fourth quarter that brought the Nets back. You know, Cam Thomas had I think it was like a 9-point quarter, and then he finished the half with 11, and he was sort of finding his footing. He was driving. He was getting beaten up like he continues to get. Like, I think there was Amen Thompson, like, elbowed that dude in the head, and Cam's just like, come on, man, like, just give me something. I think I said that on the last pod with Nick, but it was some very, very nervous times. It was the SpongeBob biting your fingernails gif where he just keeps eating them and he keeps biting them, because I honestly thought that the Nets were going to go down, but there was a good sort of bounce back in that second period. The Nets outscore the Pistons 36-23. They go in at the half with a nice little buffer. There's some good team play all round, and I think that's where the Nets gave themselves that little bit of momentum, that little bit of wiggle room that allowed them to have the ascendancy and at the end of the day just get the W. Now, in the final period, in that last quarter, there was some more unnerving moments, because Cade Cunningham was just on one. Like, that dude is a hell of a player, and I kind of want him on the Brooklyn Nets if we're being serious. Like, move some of those Suns picks, baby, for a guy like him. You know, I don't care what the numbers say. This dude is just a pure hooper. Reunite the Montverde trio of him and Dayron Sharpe, who, again, was bloody sensational tonight. But I'll get to him a little bit later. But yeah, that fourth period was essentially Dayron Sharpe time. Like, blocks, boards after boards after boards, and ones. It might have been Dayron Sharpe's best ever quarter period as a Brooklyn Net. He was brilliant. Capital B, capital R, I, double L, I, A, N, T. Brilliant. The Nets needed something to sort of jolt them and get a bit of offensive energy, creativity, get something going. And it was Day-Day that just went, get on my large shoulders, guys. I'm gonna bring us to the promised land. And he was subbed out, I think, 2:30 or around 3 minutes towards the end. And Clax came in and sort of closed the game for us. But, man, it was Dayron. It was Dayron, Dayron, Dayron. The Nets do not win this game without Dayron Sharpe. 22 minutes for him tonight. 3 or 4 from the field. 5 or 7 from the free throw line. A double-double. 11 points. 11 rebounds. 3 of them offensive. 4 blocks. 2 steals. 3 assists. Plus 15 in plus minus. Like, this man is balling right now. The discussion around him and Nick Claxton. Look, everyone knows that I'm a Clax City believer, but I also did coin the term King Sharp quite a while ago. Very niche reference for the Suicide Squad lovers out there. But in saying that, Dayron Sharp's game tonight is what sort of makes you more comfortable with, you know, Nick Claxton not being impactful but at different periods in time. But he was impactful, especially in one two-way sequence that I'll get to in a little bit. But focusing on and giving Dayron Sharp his all of the adulation that he deserves, the Nets don't win this game without Dayron Sharp. It's just plain and simple as that. His rebounding, his defensive force, he was earning fouls with his screening was just like Steven Adams-esque. He was an absolute bruiser out there. His physicality is something that the Nets just don't have. Like, the Nets are just a bit timid and shy and meek. But you throw Dayron Sharp out there, and it changes the identity and complexity of the team. And I've been starting to give him more of his flowers, but the bouquet is growing for King Sharp. Like, put the crown on that man's head tonight. The Nets don't win without his incredibly impactful 22 minutes. He was bloody brilliant. Absolutely bloody brilliant. Bloody brilliant. An incredible game. Incredible game from Dayron Sharp. And, you know, that fourth quarter was rough. And it was rough because Mikal Bridges was rough. I think that, like, he had, like, a play or two here or there that was like, okay, yeah. Or there was the drive and sort of under the rim, the sort of Portnoy step that I know Lucas Kaplan loves to speak about. And it's done a good piece and it's daily about. But other than that, there was no flow to his game or performance overall. I think that, like, it's noticeable his impact or lack of impact or negative impact he's now having. You know, you look at the box score, 6 of 14 from the field, yeah, 21 points, yeah, 3 assists, yeah, 4 boards, yeah, 3 turnovers, yeah, 0 of 1 from 3. Why is this dude taking 1 3-pointer? Like, and the Nets, like, took, like, 22 in total. Like, that's, like, a recipe for, that hasn't been a recipe for their offensive success. And I think if this was a team that was anything better, or Cade Cunningham had, like, 2 or 3 decent teammates, the Nets lose this game. They got out of jail because of this. And Mikal Bridges' shot selection, defense, is there just seems to be a lack of cohesion and flow to his game right now. And I look, the Iron Man Warrior sort of stuff, yeah, the best ability is availability, but I might be buying that less with the Mikal Bridges, who's played, what, 400-plus games straight, is it now? The number, you know, escapes me. But maybe rest him against the Bucks. Like, by the time you guys are listening to this, maybe we get the news that Mikal Bridges is getting the rest. And I wouldn't be unhappy with that. I think that there's times where, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, LeBron James, all of these, like, high-end players that have, like, a high load and carrying their teams on one end of the floor, both ends of the floor, like, they need a bit of a rest. And there's nothing wrong with telling Mikal Bridges and forcing him to take the game off. That might reset him mentally, give him that mental reprieve as well, because it seems to me that he's overthinking. Now, again, this is me prognosticating. I obviously don't know, but the fact that he's taking 1 3-pointer and his free throw shooting, like, we need to have a discussion about that, guys. Like, 9 of 15. He's taking these techs. He's getting to the free throw. Like, the 15's good. He got, like, some easy money, and he's getting these techs that are just, and he's taking them, and he's missing them. Like, if Mikal hits, he's normally, like, an 85-90% free throw shooter. And I'm like, okay, that's the game. That's the part of his game that I normally love the most. The driving game and getting to the free throw line and that sort of improvement that he's made. But when he's not making them, like, come on, man. Like, it's the easiest. And now, maybe that's another symptom of him being in his head and him thinking, I got to get this bucket. This is a bucket that I need to get for the team. And him sort of putting an increased burden on his shoulders and sort of just rather than just going, letting the mechanics, letting the muscle memory sort of take over. So, yeah, that, for me, that's the one thing that worries me quite a bit. I think his defense is certainly not to the level that it should be either, but he's not hitting free throws, and it's been a consistent trend for him as well. So look, hopefully this is just a blip. And again, you look at the box score and you go, okay, it's not too bad. But I think the eye test, and if you're watching this game overall, he wasn't positive. He wasn't a positive performer by any stretch of the imagination. And his shot selection in the fourth quarter, his lack of flow, cohesion, aggression, purpose, just general confidence didn't seem to be there. But the Nets got the win, and Mikhail contributed in little spurts here and there. So I guess you take it. So, but in saying that, you know, when it came, I guess after the break, guys, let's dive deeper more into the rest of the guys, the rest of the game, and maybe a discussion about my fellow Jacques.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, look, let's get to the Cam Thomas, Jacques Vaughn sort of discussion. Cam Thomas did not play any minutes at all in the fourth period. A lot of people were posting screenshots, video of him not standing up when the team was in the huddle, or sitting down, or not celebrating. The only person that can give you the insight into that is Cam Thomas. Now, when the Nets were severely struggling to create any level of offensive synergy, you've got a guy that's a bucket getter. You've got a guy that puts the pressure on defenses in his driving, in his three-level play. And you've got him sitting there on the pine. It just seems to me that Jacques Vaughn, I've said this before, where it's just like, it feels like for Cam Thomas's own sake, like if you're not going to play him when you are, like you have the answer to a question, and the question is, oh, can I get some reliable offense from individuals or the team? Oh, there's Cam Thomas over there, a really young, budding scorer who has an offensive bag that's pretty goddamn deep. But Jacques Vaughn just decides just not to play him. Now, I don't know, like, probably by the time you guys read this, hopefully some of the Nets beat will ask why he didn't play. Now, people will say, oh, he had four fouls. Yeah, but he missed the whole fourth quarter. Like, and Spencer Dinwiddie, he was 2 of 11 from the frickin' field. Like, I just don't get it. Like, Spencer's taking, like, these goddamn head-scratching, befuddling, dumbfoundingly stupid. His shot selection made Mikal Bridges' shot selection look like prime Kevin Durant. Like, I just don't understand it. Like, it seems to me Jacques Vaughn has the nepotism for your Mikhails, your Spencers, and it's just like those guys deserve to work through their mistakes. Cam Thomas tonight, 7 of 13 from the field in 23 minutes, had an assist, had a rebound, only the 2 turnovers and 17 points, was 3 of 4 from the free throw line. Spencer Dinwiddie in 34 minutes, 2 of 11 from the field, 0 of 3 from 3, 5 of 8 from the free throw line. He seems to miss all the big ones. 6 assists, 5 rebounds, a steal, for his 9 points. Cam Thomas was better than Spencer Dinwiddie tonight. He played better. So why are we out there, it feels like Spencer Dinwiddie is getting, like, gifted minutes. And I agree that at his best and at his most productive, he's been a really consistent performer, but he wasn't that tonight. Yeah, he was plus one on the night, and Jacques Vaughn will probably say that, you know, when the Nets were going on their little mini run in the fourth and they, you know, it was like a 12-0 run, a 14-0 run, Spencer was out there, but it felt like, to me, that was almost like going against the grain. It was almost like the Nets were winning in spite of Jacques Vaughan's lineups. And I think a lot of it, as I alluded to, was De'Aaron Sharp, some Cam Johnson threes, some DFS big plays when it mattered as well. So, yeah, Spencer, look, we heard also before the game, Jacques Vaughan discussed the fact that, you know, he's like, he doesn't like the defensive energy, doesn't like the execution by the starters, and decides to just not, like, it doesn't matter, I'm not going to make a change anyway. Like, I've given my thoughts on that on the previous episode, if you want to hear them. I don't get it. And just watch. Come tomorrow, we get the Nets starting five and Cam Thomas is coming off the bench. Now, I think that shouldn't happen. I think he works well alongside Dennis Smith Jr. And like, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith and Royce O'Neal. I think he works better with them, but I think your best, most talented offensive player deserves to start. And I think Spencer Dinwiddie should go to the bench and you stagger those minutes in a way. But can Jacques Vaughan even manage staggering minutes in an adequate and effective way? I don't know, man. Like, I really don't. I think he's an average at best coach and a pitiful coach through recent stretches the worst thing is like, he's saying he knows these things, but he doesn't do anything to change it. Like, he is stupidity personified. Derelict in his duty as a coach and in affecting the game with the lineup management, substitution patterns, all that sort of stuff that a coach can actually do, but he doesn't do because he'd rather say it than do it. Like, talk is cheap, Jacques. Talk is cheap, my guy. I'll get to the rest of the guys. And Dorian Finney-Smith was clutch. He had some big threes. His defense was positive. Led the team in plus-minus with plus 16. 11 points, 3 of 7 from the field. 3 of 8 from 3. 2 big free throws. 4 boards. A steal and assist. DFS that 3 ball was money. Off a really nice Cam Johnson drive, who I think was the Nets' second best player tonight. Full apologies and plaudits and kudos to Cam Johnson finding his footing again. He's been really consistent. 9 of 13 from the field for him. 4-6 from 3, 2-4 from the free throw line. You know, some big three balls. You know, he was... It felt like Jacques Vaughan should just find a few plays for him per quarter. You know, the ATOs, all those different sort of things. Because when he has a slither of space, and it's from three especially, that's what I'm liking from him. The volume from three is a bit higher, and he's making the right decisions. That driving kick out to DFS was a really nice play from him. So full credit to Cam Johnson finding his footing a little bit again. Nick Claxton, 5-5 from the field, 1-3 from the free throw line. Had a double-double, 11-11, 2 assists, 2 of those boards were offensive. And maybe his best sequence of the year, where he had an emphatic block, runs the floor, hands the ball off to Spence, and then dunks it like it's no one's business. That's Nick Claxton saying, give me my money. But he did it for 26 minutes. And De'Aaron Sharp probably had more of an impact. If you're looking at the plus-minus, you're looking at just the general feel of the game. Yeah, like, I don't know. The future around Nick Claxton is going to be a constant talking point. It's not worth talking about now, but that point in the game was, you know, a highlight upon highlight. So, great game, great moments from Nick Claxton is what I will say. And Royce O'Neal provided some great moments too. You know, his passing, his three balls, he just finds a way to make the timely plays when it matters. You know, he's the ultimate role player glue guy in his 15 minutes, 3 of 6 in the field, 2 of 3 from 3, couple assists, couple of rebounds. And DSJ as well, I thought, was provided that dog, sort of aggressive defensive mentality. Tried to slow down Cade Cunningham at times, but, you know, Cade just was too good for him. But, you know, had his moments, had his flashes. So, yeah, I think there's plenty of takeaways from this game. I think the big takeaway is, thank God the Nets won it. Jacques Vaughan's still a pretty bloody awful coach. Cam Thomas, I scratching my head, trying to look for the quotes as I record this, guys, about anything around him. I'll continue to have a little bit of a scroll and see if I can find anything in terms of why he didn't play down that stretch. But that was probably another big talking point. McHale and Spencer, the two leaders of the team, not really doing much when it counted, but had, you know, fleeting moments of impact in this game. But De'Aaron Sharp deserves his flowers as well. Give that man a massive bouquet. But yeah, we'll be back tomorrow, guys, for the Bucks game. We'll see how it all pans out, but a win is a win. The Nets make history against the Pistons for all the wrong reasons for them, but Thank God we got the W. Happy holidays, everyone. Subscribe to the Buzz on all streaming platforms and give us a rating and review if you have the capacity. Nets World, baby.